Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Today, I'm proud to announce a special show dedicated to Timothy Green Beckley and how we can keep his legacy alive. And joining us today are many people that I admire greatly. We have Maria DeAndrea, we have Tim R. Schwartz, and we have Michelle and Dorian Sweat, who are family of Tim Beckley. Greetings and welcome, everybody. How are you?
Wonderful. It's nice being on your show again.
It's great to have you here. Tim was on recently, so I guess we'll start with Maria and go over some of the questions we asked on that show. Maria, how did you and Tim meet?
Actually, it was really funny. I used to work at Psychic Fairs. And the way I met Tim, I met him about in the 85, around there in the 80s. And he was trying to sell a lot of his books. And he had a little table with 8 million books on it from all different publishers. And we got to talking. We just really had a lot in common, including UFO experiences in different forms from each other, but very, very positive. And he asked me to write a book for him. That was my first book. Since then, I have, I don't know how many, you know, we released that. But he asked me to write my first book, and I explained to him that I don't write books, but I just teach. He explained to me it's the same thing. So that's how we got the first book going. So he was very, very supportive, and he helped everybody always, you know. And I find with him, he had this really big heart. He helped everybody, whether they needed it or not. Yeah, so he was wonderful. And he was very, very intelligent. And when you listen to him, he could speak about anything. It didn't matter if it was UFOs or it was Hawaiian magic. He really hit every single field. And I think some people aren't aware that in one of his books, I'm not sure of the title, we have to ask other people, but he did channel some of the books that he wrote because he was also an author. So I think people don't really realize how much energy he put into a lot of things because he always made it sound like it was not a big deal and he just did this. You know how it is. When you're talented, you really don't think about it. You're just on to the next thing. You're not into ego, you know, like you.
I don't know without an ego, but thank you for the compliment, Maria. And it's always an honor to be compared to one of my heroes, Tim Beckley. Thank you. And Michelle and Dorianne, when I was at the visitation, a lot of people were sharing stories, and it seemed the family was very much a part of all the exciting things that Tim was doing. Can you share with us a little bit about what it was like having Tim Beckley in your family?
Oh, gosh. So this is Michelle. I'm Tim's, you know, we actually have joked my whole entire life. We never decided if I'm his grandniece or his great-niece. But he used to call me things like his greatest grandniece. We never really settled on what I am. but I can remember being just like a little tyke, and my grandmother's house, which was his sister, was literally home base for the early days of his company. I mean, my grandmother would sit there and fill orders, and my grandfather would handle the checks, and my uncle would go to the post office, and we knew every UPS guy by their first name. The basement was full of books and crystals, and as a kid, I loved it. I would go down in the basement and get some potions and oils and candles, and I thought I was doing
that. Wow.
And it was awesome. And you know, for someone like me growing, I grew up around that, so I didn't know any different. I didn't know that other people's families didn't, you know, maybe believe in aliens or ghosts or have, you know, boxes of crystals and weird smelling oils in their basements, you know. So I, you know, it's kind of all I've ever known, you know, and I still, I've literally worked for him or with him in some way my entire life, almost, like as long as I can remember up until the day he died.
Well, that is awesome that you were so involved. And Dorianne was saying that she was filling orders even today. So you guys are still involved in the whole
Yeah. And at one point or another, somebody in my family has been a part of it in some way. You know, whether it was filling orders or running to the post office or literally hauling manual labor style hundreds of pounds of books from one warehouse to another or whatnot. You know,
yeah, that was the old days.
Yeah, over the years there's been lots of, you know, we had, we needed a place to store all of this inventory, you know, and we used to rent out, you know, different places, different storage places. There was once this really scary, like, Mom, what are those things called? The big, scary, like a...
It was a trailer.
A trailer. A creepy trailer full of boxes of books that every now and again, you know, something would get flooded or something like that. And be like, you know, all hands on deck, all of my uncles, my cousins, my mom, you know, we'd all go and sort it out.
I had the opportunity to speak with Brian at the visitation, and he shared some adventures he went on looking for UFOs, looking for Bigfoot. Did you guys ever get involved in any of the adventures?
Unfortunately, I never did personally.
No, that was all Brian.
Yeah, that was all Brian. Got to go on all the trips with him and go out to Colorado and Arizona and do some really rad stuff. I unfortunately, all the hanging out I did with him was at the local bars and his apartment.
And I never traveled with them because, well, I had family. I had kids. Where Brian was single, so the two of them would take off and have a good time.
But you went to that UFO parade or UFO event where you met the Brinkerhoff.
Oh, yeah. I just can't remember where it was, but that's where I met Mark and Phyllis.
Yeah.
The UFO, what did they call it? Parade? UFO parade, maybe?
Yeah.
But it was like a festival thing. It was great.
It's very rare.
I'd like to go back. Huh?
It's very rare. I think I expressed this to you when I saw you last, that one of the things that touched me greatly about being with Tim's family was, you know, Tim was a very unique person, and he was very, you know, eccentric in a very positive way. And a lot of families kind of distance such people. But your family embraced him, and I found that so refreshing.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was great. He was a great guy. And, you know, you didn't want to say no to him. You know, if he asked to do something or go somewhere, it was, you know, like, sure, no problem. We'll go. It's always a good time. Even something simple as going out to look for his mail. Like, he would come and take the ride with me to pick up mail or something sometimes. And it was always an adventure. He'd always make it an adventure.
Yeah, I mean, literally, going to Home Depot with the guy was an adventure, you know? There was always, he did a lot of business out of his apartment.
Uh-huh.
So there was also always some project to do in the apartment. I mean, there have been times where literally my mom and I have been like, scaling walls, you know, like, I mean,
we plastered the ceiling.
Yeah.
What a disaster that was.
All kinds of shit. I can remember being in the you know, in New York, he lived in Midtown, and in the summer, there would be, like, rolling blackouts, you know, all the time. There would be, like, a block or two would just lose power because the Con Ed grid system was all messed up and couldn't handle the amount of electricity. I don't know if you guys are local, but there was an alert that went out on everybody's iPhone yesterday for everybody to conserve power
mm-hmm.
because it's it's a problem here. It's not as bad as it used to be, but I can remember in the 90s being in his apartment in the height of the summer, never knowing if the electricity was going to go out and whether or not we caused it, because he would be, you know, back then we were still like duplicating VHSs and DVDs. I mean, he had these massive setups where if he was selling a video, he needed to duplicate them. He did that in his apartment. He didn't pay somebody else to do it. You know, so there were kind of like a bunch of us, and the people who weren't family ended up becoming like family, like Carol, mm-hmm. who you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known her my entire life. She's been working with him for longer than I've been alive, you know. I don't call her Aunt Carol, but she's definitely like an aunt to me, you know. And there was another guy years ago named Blue who was kind of his, like, tech guy. And, you know, I can remember being in high school and working on projects with Blue, trying to get, you know, the DVD duplicator thing running or this and that. You know, it's always been a very, like, a tight-knit operation, you know, and really kind of do-it-yourself. And also, I mean, sometimes a pain in the ass, but also a lot of fun.
That sounds awesome. Tim, you're part of those movie-making adventures. You shared
yes.
that on the show.
Yeah, well, and I just have to say that Michelle, over the last few months, actually took over editing the videos for our show, Exploring the Bizarre, when they would go up on YouTube. Tim had another person who was doing it that for whatever reasons couldn't do them anymore. And so he got, Tim got her to actually come in. And so I have to hand it to her. She did a great job. You know, Tim had asked me if possibly I could do it. And, you know, I probably could, but he had me doing so many other things that I had to tell
yeah.
him. I said, I can't take on this as well, because, you know, in order to properly edit, you know, I mean, what, it was an hour video and all that stuff. I mean, that would take up probably, at least a couple of days. So I'm very happy that she did it. And I tell you, the pieces that she put together, she did a great job for somebody who you know, just really came in kind of out of the cold with the show to do it.
Tim, I really appreciate that. You know, my uncle was also really grateful and, you know, was constantly praising me for the work that I did on those videos. But I got to tell you, it was way more work than I thought it was going to be when I first took it on. And
exactly.
They took a lot. And, you know, it was during, you know, not during quarantine lockdown time period, but, you know, work was very slow for me. It took a long time to pick back up after we kind of, you know, some of the restrictions were lifted. So when I started doing it, I had a lot more time to sit and do it. But it does take, you know, a couple of days to do a one-hour video. I started to get a little bit faster, but then I started to get really busy at work. So I also had not as much free time to work on the videos. And I can still hear him yelling at me about the Roswell video that's still not done. And I'm going to finish it.
Oh.
<I promise. laughs>
Well, and like I said, I mean the ones that you did manage to get finished. I mean you just did such a good job with them, and I know that doing something like that, you know, is not an easy task. You know, there's a lot of kids who just don't, you know, understand what actually goes into doing a proper editing job for a video like that. I mean, yeah, sure, you can just, you know, you can go and slap on some pictures and do some crossfades here or there, and, you know, okay, it's done. But you know, obviously you cared about what you were going to,
you know,
put together and put out there.
Funny you say that, because he would tell me, I'll just slap something together, you know, and every time I went to slap something together, I couldn't live with it, you know. Mm-hmm. have to go in and, you know, make it nicer, you know.
Oh, that I can hear Tim saying that, because he would say that to me a lot of times with, you know, stuff that I was working on for him. He's like, oh, just put, you know, such and such on there, and, you know, we'll put it out. And I was just like, I can't do that. I said, you know me, I have to do this properly. And he'd get pissed off at me, you know, because it would take me a little bit longer than he wanted. But then the final project, he'd be so happy with him that, yep. You know, he would forget at that time, at that moment, you know, how, because, you know, Tim, when he would bring us together to do these projects, I mean, he would take his time to get his part of them finished and then out to everybody else. But then once we got it, he was really impatient with us doing our part as well. I mean, he'd be like, you know, every day he'd be like, well, you know, how much longer do you think it's going to take? I'm like, I have no idea. You know, it's going to take as long as it takes. The next day he'd ask me the same question again. So after a while, after a while, I would just say, oh, well, I expect to have it by the end of the week. And then, you know, at the end of the week, I'd be like, maybe it'll be next week. But then a lot of times after I would get a project finished and to him, then he'd be like, oh, well, I've got some other stuff I want to add to it. So I'm going to take another couple of weeks here, dude.
No, he was funny like that. You know, I have to tell you along that note, he called me up once, and it was an emergency. You know how that was. So it was an emergency that I write a book immediately. He really needed it. He gave me a title. I don't know. So I wrote a book in 2 weeks. I was up day and night, day and night, and day and night, in between working, because I do, you know, the psychic paranormal field. And in between all that, it took me 2 weeks to write the whole book. And then he decided it's not a rush after I sent it to him.
Yes, that's it.
You know, after all that. But he did appreciate everybody, you know. And I know with you, Tim, he really appreciated you. And he was always talking about family. And he was really there for everybody. And I think a lot of people may not realize that he was a filmmaker, and he hung out with, he told me once he went to a party with the Beatles, and, you know, he was very impressive. And to him, it was like, oh, I was just with another band.
Maria, I'm sorry, Hercules, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, since Maria brought up family, it reminded me of a story that Tim told me when he was still a teenager and living at home. And he was friends with a gentleman called Richard Shaver, who, if anybody is familiar with, Richard Shaver had the whole, underground Dero mystery type of thing. You know, wrote books, wrote articles for Amazing Stories magazine, you know, back in the 40s and 50s. Well, by the 60s, Shaver was really involved in what he called, what were they called? Basically, it was his belief that there were certain rocks that were left over from some antediluvian civilization, and that these rocks, they were some kind of like holographic communication devices that almost like our equivalent of DVDs. Now, of course, you know, by now they had greatly, you know, they had been covered with, you know, almost like fossils and were very, you know, difficult to find. Well, Shaver would take these rocks and he would slice them very, very thin, and then he could find in the crystalline matrix on the surface what he thought were the like the holographic images that were impressed upon these rocks, you know, a million years ago. Well, apparently Shaver would send Tim, I guess, boxfuls of these rocks to his home, which I guess just really honked off his mother, because and she was constantly complaining that, you know, these dirty rocks were constantly being mailed to them, and she made Tim like keep them outside because they were just full of dirt and stuff, and get in her house all messed up. And Tim just, I mean, he relished telling that story. I guess that was one of the few things that she actually would complain about when it came to all of his interests.
Were there any other things, Dory?
There were so many other things. So much. I don't know. Michelle, what do you...
I don't know his mom. Is there anything else that pissed off Granny?
Oh, no. He was an angel to them.
Oh, actually, I would love to talk more about this, because this I don't know about. I think that my grandmother, Tim's sister, had a bit of a resentment, from what I understand, against him, that he was always kind of the angel that got away with everything. Is that true?
Yeah. He did something wrong. She got in trouble for it.
Oh.
Like Carol calls him, right? Remember, he has a spoiled little brat. My mom used to call him that, too. So the first time I ever heard Carol call him that, I was laughing, like, forever.
Tim's sister actually allowed him to shoot scenes from one of his direct video movies, you know, back in probably would have been like 2002, something like that, at her house. It was in New Jersey, right?
Where
she lives. And this movie involved scantily clad women running around, and somehow he managed to convince her.
Right, but she didn't know what it was all about. And then,
skin-eating jungle vampire.
That's it. That's the one.
Okay, and my mom was a corner house on a very main road. Okay, so now you have all these young girls dressed up in kind of like jungle grass skirt looking things, but no top. And they're running all around the house and in the woods and everything. My mother she took a fit. She said, you can't have them in the front of the house like that. People were stopped blowing their horns. People were slamming on their breasts. She took a fit. And it went on for what? Maybe a week? It went on for a good week. Yeah.
So... Speaking of being, you know, from, how can I explain this? So growing up with a family that was, you know, having alien conspiracy theories, ghosts, all of this stuff was totally normal for me. So when he was doing that filming at my grandmother's, I must have been like 15, 16, 17, somewhere in there. And I took my best friend at the time. He was, you know, the boy from down the road. His name was Ross. And I said, you know, Ross, do you want to come to my grandma's and watch my uncle film a porno? And he was like, yes, I do. So I bring Ross to my grandmother's. And you know, before we know it, we're helping, I think it was Carla, who was also at the viewing. She had on the alien outfit, the green cover, the black coveralls with the green hair.
Carla.
Yeah, so I've known Carla also pretty much my whole life. She was a very good friend of my uncle's. And so I remember helping her. And again, I'm 15, 16 years old. I'm helping her make this giant paper mache vagina that is going to eat people in the movie. I had a blast. Ross doesn't know what to do with any of this information. And so we're also illegally drinking. I'm sure my uncle was just giving me booze freely, but, you know, Ross isn't part of the family. So the only things I remember really from this experience was helping Carla make the paper mache vagina, and then also Ross getting so drunk that I could not bring him home. I didn't know what to do with him. He's upstairs in my grandmother's house throwing up in the bathroom.
Oh.
My Uncle Brian had to come help with that situation. And I think I had to call his mom and say we were sleeping at my grandma's really innocently, you know, like, no worries, Miss Julia. We're just going to sleep at my grandma's house. There's definitely not underage drinking, a porno being shot, or anything of the nature of that. You know?
Plenty of adult supervision.
Yeah, don't worry, we're good. I also brought Ross, God, we must have been like 12 or 13 years old, that I wanted something. So T told me, get on the train, come in the city, I'll bring you to the Halloween store. And for me, as you know, a young girl from New Jersey, I love the Halloween store, but it only came around at Halloween time.
Mm-hmm.
But in New York, there was a Halloween store, Halloween Adventure on 4th Avenue, that's open all year long. So T would bring me there and buy me whatever I wanted. But, you know, it's such a different time. I have a 14-year-old niece now, and I'm like, I would never put her on the train to Manhattan. And there's cell phones. I'd be able to easily find her. How Tim ever found me in Penn Station, I have no idea. But I brought Ross with me one of those times, too. And I remember we were like, yeah, look at us. He had, like, a little alien bong in his bedroom. I thought that was really cool. And he took us to the Halloween store. And we took photos with, like, the Abominable Snowman and all kinds of other shit that they have there, you know, like the big Freddy Cougar and whatever. And then, you know, he got us stoned and drunk and sent us back on the train, and we got lost. It was awesome. Like, everything was always an event. I just, you know, sorry, I'm kind of, like, all over the place right now. But I just, you know, I never thought about the fact that people looked at him like the cool uncle they wish they had. And he was the really cool uncle that I did have, you know, and I'm really grateful for that.
Well, and I should point out,
pure debauchery.
Yes. Well, and I should point out that those films, the, you know, like Skin Eating Jungle Vampires, they weren't hardcore.
They were soft,
what you would see on Cinemax.
It was really funny. Go ahead.
He was telling me that
they had one of his porn films come back to Greenwich Village, you know, and it was they're going to have the red carpet, and they're going to have all these news people, and it was really, really wonderful. And he didn't tell me what kind of film. He just invited me to go with him so that I can accompany him down the red carpet. And he says, you know, I can promote what I do. Now, I'm in a spiritual, psychic, but paranormal field, but I'm also a minister. I'm interfaith. So I'm thinking, okay, so we're going to go. We're going to have a good time. Before we got there, you know, a couple of days before, I said to him, by the way, what kind of a film did you do? He goes, oh, it was porn, and he says, I'm in it, and this way you get to see what I used to be like. So I'm like, I really love you. I'm not going. It's not going to help my reputation. And I don't really want to see you like that. He's like, no, you don't understand. I want you to know what I was like. I was like, no, we're good. And then he sent me a copy of it.
Oh, God.
But, Rhea, was that Driller?
The what?
Was that the video Driller?
Yes, I was just going to mention. It was actually called Driller. And he says, I'll point out who I am. I'm like, no, we're good. And then he sent me a copy of it. I have to admit, I have not looked at it yet.
Up the highway from my house, we used to have an adult movie theater, an adult cinema. And mm-hmm. I remember going down the highway with my oldest son. And he pointed out, he goes, "Hey, Mom, isn't that Uncle T's movie playing in the movie?" And I turned and I looked, I wanted to die. Because, you know, he was young enough that he was like, "Well, can we go see it?"
Yeah, now Driller, now that he made that in the 1980s, and that one was an X-rated film, and he actually managed. He actually managed to get funding for it and shot it on 35 millimeter film. Because most of the movies, and this was just a little bit before, you know, video took over everything, and, you know, most films like that were shot on 16 millimeter, and if they were shown then in a larger theater, they were blown up, you know, into 35 millimeter. But no, Tim went all the way right from the start and got, like, the big film stock 35 millimeter to do this. And I mean, you know, the money that he was able to get, I mean, it was up there on the screen. Yeah.
So given that Tim was so creative and so unique in his interest, how do we, other than by sharing these tales, and I could see books being written, how can we honor Tim's legacy and his memory?
I did want to say something about that. I think the fact that his family, Dory and Michelle, are continuing to do his work is unbelievable. I'm just so impressed. And I think that's so wonderful that the publishing company that he absolutely loved is still going to continue. So I think honoring him, there's no word for that one. Yeah, very, very positive. I think with us, we just, you know, when we lecture and we speak, we're always going to mention him, especially because we've worked with him. So anything I know with me, any book I've ever written, you know, it's going to come up that he was the publisher. And then, you know, you have to put in some fun things in his life. So he's never going to be forgotten, you know, and we all loved him. So it's all positive. And he was really funny. He would come out with funny things out of the blue for 2 seconds, and then 2 seconds later he'd forget. And we should have really written it down, because that could have made a whole book.
I really
write a book about his travel. Because he always had some fun experiences when he traveled around. Always came back with good stories.
Yeah.
No, and he traveled all over the world,
he went too. I remember him saying he went to Bora Bora, and everywhere he went, he wrote an article or a book or something, because he was really into knowledge. I know he went to Hawaii, and he came back, and we have a whole book from Hawaii about, you know, shamanism and, you know, rituals and how they really look at it. So it wasn't like he was just traveling and saying, okay, I'm going to go and look at this one particular thing and I'm done. He was really inspired.
That's when he got his tiki bar. When he
It's in his living room. It's funny because you go there and there's this big bar in his living room. I'm like, oh, really? In the middle of the room.
This is a New York City apartment. This bar takes up a majority of the room. I mean, it's
almost
space.
Oh, yeah, it takes up almost the whole wall.
So, Tim, Maria, those carvings, what do you call them that are on the tiki bar?
Tiki.
He brought those back from Hawaii.
Oh, nice.
Those actually came from Hawaii. Somebody, he had them, I guess a guy was carving them, and he had them carve them, those shoes, and he brought them back from Hawaii. And I guess he needed the tiki bar to keep them on. That's why he had the tiki bar.
Yeah, he would. In the middle of it, he'd have like a TV on there. you know? And the first time I saw it, I went, oh, it's, you're using it for the TV. He goes, no, all the alcohol is right behind it.
Yeah, he would often tell me that after he put the bar up, that he realized that there was a lot of material, books and files and things like that that were behind it that he could now, he couldn't get access to it. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, we would be writing a book and he would say, he goes, I know that the information I need is behind that damn tiki bar, but I can't get it. And you know, I really do think that, you know, after a while he began to, you know, to rue the day that he put that bar up.
Yeah. And not to mention, I guess because it's bamboo, it started to tilt, and I was always trying to figure out a way to make it more stable because I was afraid of it. It would always lean to one side. And then I get that side straightened. I get it straightened out, and the next time I come back, it was leaning the other way. But yeah, it was hard to get behind there because the windows for the apartment were right behind it too, for that room. Mm-hmm. So I guess put it back too far. Whoever built it, they put it back too far, too close to the window.
Yeah, because I'm relatively small, and yeah, I mean I'm pushing 40, but I, you know, he would. He always thought I was 15 and I could just scramble back there and get whatever he needed, you know. And there's these bins, he had these like plastic bins, you know, the drawer bins that he, you know, when they came out with them, he loved them because they were like cheap filing cabinets, you know. They were, but they're made out of plastic, and he would fill them with books and files and shit, and it couldn't hold the weight. So you're behind, or I'm behind the tiki bar. There's all kinds of shit back there. And it's like a death trap, you know. If I go in there to try to get some folder or something that he needs, the bins are falling on me, and the tiki bar can't support any weight. So you can't lean on that for any type of, you know, that's not a safe zone. And so the only safe place to go is out the window. I mean, it's just the whole place.
I think one of the things that I really loved with Tim is that when he talked about anybody, he always had such positive things to say. He wasn't dwelling on people's negative qualities or what they did wrong. Everything was positive with him. And you don't really find that too often. You know? And he just loved everybody. He had a really big heart. And like I said, he was always speaking positively. And especially when he was talking about the show that, you know, Tim, you did with him. You know, I remember him telling me how you said you were going to have it ready in a week. And he's like, it's 2 days. Can I call him? Can I call him? You can call him. It's not going to speed it up. And he's like, but it's 2 days. I said, didn't he tell you a week? Well, yes. Okay, never mind.
Well, and when he would call me, I'd be like, well, you know, I was working on it, but now you interrupted me, and so, you know, yeah, I'm gonna be delayed, you know, for the next hour as you talk to me. But you know, I would say that to him, but you know, I always welcomed his calls because he always managed to call me at least every day, you know, sometimes several times a day.
Did you want to mention with him also? I know that you're involved in the filmmaking, and I know that you guys were writing partners and worked on a lot of creative projects together. Did you ever go out in the field with Tim to look for UFOs or cryptids or anything?
No. I met Tim first in it would have been probably around 1983. When I was working at a television station in Dayton, Ohio, and I had done an interview with J. Allen Hynek, who had he had come to Dayton to do a speech at the National Aeronautics Museum there at the Air Force Base. about UFOs, and I had put CBS, the station was the CBS affiliate, and the CBS wanted to put that interview up on their satellite news feed, which, you know, at that time, any station around the country, any CBS station around the country, could pull these stories off of this news feed and then use it on their newscast. And somebody, one of the stations in New York, must have carried that because Tim managed to track me down and, you know, asked for a VHS copy and a transcript. And, you know, we remained friends from that time on. And it wasn't until probably the I had moved to Indianapolis to work at the PBS station there. And around that time, he was just starting to get ready to publish his UFO Universe magazine. And he got a hold of me and wanted me to contribute some articles and to do research for him because, you know, one of the things that I've always been interested in and love doing is you know, research on subjects. Uh-huh. So, you know, he wanted me to do that, and he wanted me also to punch up articles from some other people that he liked the information, but he didn't care too much for their writing. So I did that a lot for him. But as for actually the two of us going out into the field doing research and investigations together, it was more along the lines that, you know, he would get a hold of me and say, hey, such and such thing happened, you know, in say like somewhere in Indiana, you know, in the general vicinity of where I lived, and you know, would send me off to go and do the research investigation, and then I would, you know, get the information back to him. It wasn't until we started doing those direct video films that I actually physically met him. I went to, you know, Manhattan a number of times. He actually came to Indiana a couple of times as we worked on these things. And then even afterwards, you know, whenever I had a chance to be in New York, I'd always, you know, take the time naturally to, you know, go and see him.
And how do you think his legacy should be preserved?
Well, thank heavens, really, for Amazon, because as long as Amazon is going to be around, people are going to be able to buy his books. You know, I mean, it used to be when you had to say, like, you know, like the brick and mortar publishers. They would take a book and maybe, you know, publish, if you were lucky, a couple thousand copies. And then that would be it. Unless you were somebody like Stephen King, you know, that the books would constantly be, you know, published or republished. But, you know, for the types of books that we do, you know, you'd be lucky if you sold through just a regular publisher. Who oftentimes didn't really know what to do with books dealing with the paranormal or UFOs or cryptids, you know. I mean, once the book was sold out, then that was it. You know, that more than likely you'd never get reprinted, and the books would basically disappear. Now, with places like Amazon, now that you have this, like the print on demand, if people want a book, even an older book that Tim had wrote, like, you know, so like Kahuna Power or some of these other books, you know, you could order them and they'll be delivered to your house in just a few days. And I think really right now that is the best thing going, keeping Tim's memory alive, is that people will be able to get his books far into the future, again, as long as Amazon, you know, remains solvent, That really, I think that is one of the best things going. Tim, but all of us, all of us who were involved in writing books with him, that hopefully, for years into the future, people will be able to read these books and know about Timothy Green Beckley, who he was, what he was interested in, and all of these fantastic things that he loved so much.
That is an awesome idea. So Maria suggested we bring up Tim and share stories and the things you're doing. That's going to happen. And Amazon, as you pointed out, as long as it exists, people can get Tim's writings. So we can refer people to Amazon and to his writings. Michelle, how about you? What do you think? You worked with your wonderful uncle. And from what I understand, from what people have said, you and Dory are keeping everything going. How can we support what you're doing?
Great question. We're actually still, he started to tell me things over the last couple of years about what I was supposed to do to keep the business running, what websites I needed to check, what drawer had this in it or that in it, the book, the instructions I needed. But we, took a few weeks of bereavement. And really, today was our first day of meeting at his apartment and kind of going through and figuring stuff out. So, we actually already did a call to Tim Schwartz during the day today for help. I think that I will be probably relying on a lot of the people that were close to him to help keep the business going. And because I don't know all the ins and outs, and I think that is a big way that his friends and colleagues can help is, just to answer the phone when we call with questions. And then I think, he was such a energetic, charismatic guy. I was thinking about it today after we left his apartment that it was routine for us to go get something to eat, go out to a restaurant, get a drink. And in a lot of ways, I just kind of feel like that's a small way that people can honor him is to continue to go out and party, go to the bar, go to the restaurant. Get outside, go to the movies. He went to the movies every single week. He didn't even have a kitchen. He never cooked a meal himself. He went out to eat for every meal he ate. And he always brought whoever was around, he treated,
Mm-hmm.
We're going here, we're going there, we're getting food, Food, drinks, movies.
And, he was really funny. I went away to on some of the trips with him, and, we would ghost hunt, and then, I'd do my thing psychically. He would write articles and, let people know what's going on or what isn't. And it was funny. We were sitting in a bar, and they had a band going, and they had this very nice young lady walking around singing, and then they had some nice young ladies sitting around us, and some other people, and he looks at me, he looks at this lady sitting near him, he looks at me, he says, "Listen, I'm going to see you later." And I don't know what he said to this nice lady, but they just walked away wherever they were going. He's like, "Don't go up to the room. Don't knock on the door. I'll see you tomorrow."
This is what I'm talking about.
But he was very charismatic.
Every day was like that,
Mm-hmm.
So living life well and fully. That's an awesome tribute to anybody. And Dorian, how about you? What are your thoughts?
I kind of go with the Amazon thing, too, and just word of mouth from everybody who knew him. So, I'm sure people are going to talk about him forever.
Mm-hmm.
And in so many different fields.
Yeah, he was exactly in such different fields. He knew so many people, and, you know, I'm sure that you just type his name on, you know, into Google, and people can find things through that about him.
You know, it was funny. I had some clients call me that, you know, I got the clients to my books. And so they all knew Tim because they would call him and order my books, other people's books, you know. And, you know, when they found out that Tim passed, you know, they were calling me all the time. They're crying. They're upset because even though they didn't physically meet him, when they would order a book, he would tell stories. So they always felt like they were part of his life rather than they ordered something. You know, so he made everybody feel like family.
You know, one of the things that everybody always talks about was, you know, how generous Tim was. And you know, I mean, I was writing for, you know, different magazines and stuff way back, you know, when I was in college. I would write articles for magazines just to, you know, make a little extra money, you know, to help pay my way through. But when I started writing with Tim, one of the things that always stood out to me was that he always paid, and paid on time. So, some of these other publishers, you know, it would be like pulling teeth, trying to get the money that, you know, you were owed. And that was never a problem with Tim. I never even had to send him an invoice or anything. He paid as soon as he possibly could, never complained about it, and oftentimes would throw in just, you know, some extra you know, money here or there, just, you know, just because that's the kind of guy he was. And you know, during the middle of the pandemic last year, when everybody was quarantined and nobody could go anywhere, one day I got this package from Amazon that, you know, I was like, okay, where'd this come from? I hadn't ordered anything. And Tim had gone and ordered me just some stuff. He ordered me like a box of cold brew coffee and, you know, popcorn and just, you know, just some stuff like that he knew that I liked. I didn't ask for it. He never even mentioned he was going to do it. It just showed up on my doorstep. You know, that's the kind of guy, you know, that Tim was.
He did that a lot.
And he was very thoughtful. You know. Like, I'm from Hungary. I'm from Budapest. And it was really funny because during the same time that he sent something to you, apparently went past a Hungarian bakery. So now I got something just like you did. I got some kind of pastry that's Hungarian, and I'm thinking, I don't know where I got this from. You know, there was no note. Nothing tells you where it's from. So I called him because he did things like that. And he goes, oh, I forgot to tell you it's on the way. It's on the way. I said, no, it's here. He says, well, I was walking past the pastry and it said Hungary. But he remembers everything about everybody like that. You know, what they liked, or, you know, what they were interested in. So he really genuinely cared about people. It wasn't a job, and he really cared.
And that's an excellent place to end today's conversation. And we have just enough time for everybody to share their contact info. And I guess Maria will start with you.
Okay, so my email address is my first initial last name. So it's MDANDREA. 100@gmail.com. And my cell number is 631-559-1248. And my website is just Maria DeAndrea, www.mariadeandrea.com.
Thank you so very much, Michelle.
Me and Dorianne are taking over. So MrUFO8@hotmail.com.
I love it. That is so good.
And that's the best way to reach both of you, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And Tim?
Yeah, we still have the Conspiracy Journal website that Tim and I had. It's still up and running. That's conspiracyjournal.com. All of our articles, Tim's articles, mine, Sean Castile, those are all still available to read. The books that we have written, the links that are on the site. Still take everybody to Amazon. So, I mean, if you're listening to this show, check out our website. Look for our books. Tim's last book was Alien Lives Matter. It's Okay to Be Gray. He was extremely proud of that book. So order a copy for yourselves. Sean Castile and I are trying to put together Tim's last book that he was in the process of writing when he passed away. We have most of the material, so now we're trying to get it together and get it published in a couple of months.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Please let me know when that happens, and I'll gladly promote it. And we have a couple more minutes left, so I have one more question. Maria Faye, you had mentioned, and when I spoke with Carol, she had mentioned that Tim channeled several of his books. I was trying to figure out which ones they were. Do you know which ones they are offhand, or does anybody know which ones they are offhand?
You know, I really don't remember the titles because Carol said that some of them that were channeled, he didn't mention in the book that they were channeled.
Right, he said a businessman.
That's why I said some people weren't aware. I think there's one or two where he might have mentioned it, but I honestly don't know the title. Dory and Michelle might be able to find out which ones they are from Carol. She'd know. But I don't know the titles offhand.
Yeah. Awesome. I wish Carol was on today. I mean, truly, she is. Like I said, you know, I've known her. She's worked with Tim since before I was born. I've known her my whole life. She's the lifeblood of this operation. She's the one who really gets it all done. So she would definitely know.
I'll ask her. I invited her to come on, but she was kind of shy to come on to the podcast. But I will give her that. Unless Tim knows of him. Tim, do you know him?
Some of it may have been some of like the Ashtar Command books, but I'm not quite sure. I mean, I don't think he wrote like an entire books based on channeling. It would have been like, you know, bits and pieces in various publications.
Yeah, I think a lot of times he just threw in a little part here and a little chapter there, but it wasn't that he wrote a book on that. That's why it's hard to remember which one.
I have a quest to go on then, and I'll speak with Carol. And thank you to everybody who came on tonight. I greatly appreciate it, and it was great speaking to all of you again, and I look forward to our next conversation. As I pointed out to some of you, I'm Greek, and Greeks have a custom that after like a month and a half, they do a mnemosyno, which means in memory of. So by then, hopefully, my Zoom show will be up and running, and I'd like to get everybody set up for memorial show. Details to follow.
Okay, it sounds wonderful.
Thanks, Hercules.
And thank you for having me on the show.
And thanks for being on the show. And thanks to everyone, and thanks to our audience who called tonight and listened, or who's checked us out by their computer link, or are going to be checking out the show later on demand. Until next time, this is us. Wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And again, thanks a lot, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Love you.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you dream, till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you